Good morning. I'm Rick Clough. This is the Early Edition. It's Tuesday, September the 13th. And coming up in this half hour, the practice of forced psychiatric treatment is being challenged in B.C. Supreme Court today. I'm going to speak to the lawyer who argues the B.C. law violates the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. That's coming up. But first, Drew Karakas is here with headlines from our CBC Vancouver newsroom.
It has been a frustrating morning for
Scott. I'll be back with more traffic and weather in about 10 minutes.
Thanks, Amy. It's now 12 minutes past 8 o'clock here on the Early Edition on CBC Radio 1, 690 on your AM dial and 88.1 FM across Metro Vancouver. Under BC's Mental Health Act, anyone who is involuntarily detained cannot refuse any psychiatric treatment. Now, that could include medication, even electroshock therapy. Well, according to lawyer Laura Johnston, that is illegal. That violates the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and she's filing a complaint with the BC Supreme Court later today. Laura is a Community Legal Assistance Society, and with the Community Legal Assistance Society, represents several clients who underwent forced psychiatric treatment. And for more, Laura Johnston joins us now on the line. Good morning.
Good morning.
I understand BC is the only province that has this law on its books.
That's right. So BC is the only deemed consent model. It's a kind of legal fiction. The law says that as long as you have involuntary status, whether you're in the community or in hospital, you are deemed to have already provided your consent to every form of psychiatric treatment.
Even though you may not have voluntarily walked into that hospital.
Yeah, you can walk in voluntarily and then be detained as an involuntary patient. There's a lot of ways in which someone comes in contact with that system.
Okay, so can you give us an example, maybe a reason why someone might be involuntarily detained for mental health reasons?
Yeah, and, you know, I think it's a common misunderstanding that to be detained under the Mental Health Act, you must be at risk of harm to yourself or others. That's not the case. You can be an involuntary patient if a doctor's of the opinion that you may deteriorate if you're not detained. So there's no need for there to be concerns of risk to harm yourself or others in creating this detention.
One doctor, any doctor?
To do the initial certification, one doctor, any doctor. It doesn't have to be a psychiatrist. That one doctor filling out that one-page form is enough to detain you for 48 hours. After that first 48 hours, a second doctor has to fill in a second certificate. But there's no need for that second doctor to actually meet you or examine you or interview you in any way.
How often does this happen?
Quite frequently. I think you could ask the Ministry of Health what the numbers are for certification, but the Community Legal Assistance Society represents people at review panels who are challenging their involuntary status under the Act, and we do hundreds of those hearings every year.
If a person is considered ill enough or out of sorts enough to be detained, mm-hmm. are they fit enough to make decisions about their own psychiatric treatment?
That's a great question, and a question I think that a doctor should ask. So right now, when you're detained, there's no requirement that doctors assess whether or not you're capable to make a treatment decision. So what this case is arguing is that doctors should at least perform that assessment. You know, a lot of people who have involuntary status under the Act are actually living in community on leave. They are going about their jobs and their day-to-day lives. They're living next door to you. They are not a danger. But they're still subject to forced treatment, and if they don't comply with that forced treatment, then they can be apprehended by police and recalled to hospital. So it's sort of a dangling sword over their head.
Now, you say this law is unconstitutional. How?
So the case argues that forcing non-consensual treatment on people is a violation of our Section 7 Charter rights to life, liberty, and security of the person. There's a lot of physical force and non-consensual touching involved in forced treatment. I think a lot of us think of, you know, handing someone some pills to swallow, and certainly that does happen. But other forms of force include detaining people, putting them in seclusion or solitary confinement, putting them in four-point physical restraints, holding them down with security staff or ward staff, often with their clothes stripped off of them, and injecting them with needles with medication. Similarly, electroconvulsive therapy is a full-blown general anesthetic procedure. So these are quite high levels of physical force to be carrying out without consent. The case also argues that this is an equality violation under Section 15 of the Charter because people who are seen as having a mental disability are deprived of the same rights and benefits that people without mental disabilities, people with physical problems, have. So in particular, you know, one of the things the case argues is you know, if you assess a patient and you believe they're incapable of making their decisions, go to a substitute decision maker. Go to a representative.
I'm just going to say, can they have a family member or someone who's a representative make the decisions on their behalf?
Yeah, and that's a great question. No, they can't. So, you know, right now, if I were to step off the curb and get hit by a bus and taken to hospital, I'm unconscious. You know, I'm obviously incapable of making my own treatment decisions, but the law says a doctor has to get substitute consent from my representative or a family member of mine. But with involuntary patients, you know, even if we did think they were incapable, why exclude family members? Why exclude legal representatives? All that does is further isolate people with mental disabilities.
What about those who do suffer from some sort of mental illness who should be detained, I should say, without consent? What about those people?
So the case actually isn't challenging the law that permits detention. So detention can still continue, even if we succeed in this case. The only thing the case is challenging is, you know, once a doctor has decided to detain someone, why not provide an assessment about whether or not they're capable to make their treatment decisions? Why not let them or a substitute make treatment decisions for them?
Interesting. Laura, thanks for your time this morning. We'll continue to follow this story.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Laura Johnson is a lawyer with the Community Legal Assistance Society. Brings us now to 18 and a half minutes past.